Okay, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to our class on cooking for Shabbos and Yontif. Although I threw in Yontif, but I don't know if we'll get to Yontif in 6 weeks. Maybe. It depends on the group. Never know exactly how many weeks this takes. But we will take you through the entire process of what is involved in the malacha of Bishul, which is cooking, which we know is one of the 39 prohibited activities on Shabbos that you may not cook on Shabbos. But still, the Almighty wants you to enjoy the Shabbos, and you have a good knowledge of the laws of cooking and heating and reheating and things like that, one can have a fairly enjoyable and warm meal Shabbos. So let me first say the first ground rule of this class, and I'm going to be very strict about this rule. Usually I'm not so strict about how I give the classes, but this kind of class has to be very strict. Every week builds on the previous week, right? If you don't know this week's material, you'll be lost for next week, and et cetera, et cetera. So, number one, if you miss a class, by all means, the class will be on the web the next day. You have to make up the class, because if not, you will totally be lost, because everything builds on the other. Same as kashrus class, certain halacha classes, you have to take it in a sequential fashion. Therefore, the first week is easy, and then the second week gets harder, and the third week is harder, and harder, and harder, and harder. Now, the idea is not for you to just ask me, well, what about this, and what about that, and what about this? That's not the way the mind is meant to learn. The mind is meant to learn principles. If you learn principles, and you know the principles, then it's easier to remember the principles. And then you'll remember the laws that are applicable. So that's what we're going to do. For sure, this week is going to be mostly principles, not a lot of what you want to hear. Well, what about this and what about that? Next week, we'll get into all the what about this and then for all the other weeks. So I will take any question of understanding, but I will not take any questions about what about this kind. If you start with the question, what about, I will not answer your question. Because, number one, I will most likely, by the end of the 6 weeks, get to everything you could think of as a question. And if I don't, then by the last week or so, then you can ask me what I don't have. But what usually happens is you're going to ask something that I'm going to get to in the next class. And it's based on principles that are in the next class. And it's no point in me telling you the answer if you don't know the principles behind them. Okay? I don't want to sound like scary and rigid or anything. But I've done this class many times, and if you follow that rule, then it goes really well. Because the mind works best with less to memorize and more sequential understanding. So that works really good in such a class. So just keep that in mind. If I say something you don't understand, by all means ask. If you say, I don't understand what you just said, it doesn't make sense or whatever, that's fine. But don't ask me a what about, especially this week. Okay, especially this week, because we're just laying down the fundamentals and probably even the beginning of the following week. Depends how far we'll get this week. We'll get maybe some stuff from next week. This week depends. But there's a certain point where it's not productive to ask questions of what ifs, but we will get to them. Okay, if we have that, we'll have a good time over here, and you will learn a lot, and you will really understand everything that has to do with cooking on Shabbos. Okay, first of all, now there's a little bit of an outline here of today's class, about the concept of Bishul and cooking. And the subjects we'll talk about today is the description of this malacha, what degree of cooking is prohibited, the concept of accelerating the cooking process, and reheating cooked foods. That's the topic for today. Now, on the other sheet, there are certain terms that as the weeks pass, you should be familiar with the Hebrew terms so that when you're discussing these ideas, it looks like you're discussing them intelligently. Okay? These are the shop words, the shop talk words, the halachic words that are used, and we'll come to them. And by today, for example, we should have covered 7 of the 15 items today. And you should practice during the week to know what those words are and what they mean. So when you call me up with a question, of course I'll answer any question, but you'll sound so much more intelligent and learned when you use the terms that are here, and they really make it a lot easier. You'll use less words if you use these terms as opposed to other terms, okay? So you'll just keep a running eye on the cooking terms, and this is just an outline of the class, and of course you may want to take some notes over here. So Cooking is a general classification which covers all methods of using heat to prepare food, which would include baking, frying, broiling, roasting, etc., etc. Even though cooking could apply to non-food items, but as well as food items, but the purpose of this class, we're only going to limit our discussion to the preparation of food. So let's start with a description of this melacha, of this prohibited activity. And there I've given you the definition. The halachic definition of cooking is using heat to alter the quality of an item. And generally we mean alter, we mean for the better. That's what we generally mean. Your heat is using to make the food better. And we'll give you lots of examples of this. Now, which foods are subject to this prohibition? So this prohibition applies to all solid and liquid foods, even foods that normally could be eaten in their raw state. That is different than, for example, the laws of Bishul Akum, when a non-Jew cooks in your house, which is not the topic of for today. But we know if a non-Jew cooks certain foods, it renders the food treif. However, there, the exception there is if the non-Jew cooks food that can be eaten raw, then it doesn't make your food treif. So the laws of Shabbos are different. Doesn't matter. Even if I could eat those carrots without cooking them, but the fact is if I cook the carrots, what is it we say? It's using heat to alter the quality of the item, and cooked carrots are definitely different and softer than raw carrots. So it doesn't matter. Or drinks that I could have drank cold, and you make them hot, it doesn't matter. They are all subject to the prohibition of cooking. You cannot cook it on Shabbos, because cooking improves them. But it's critical that there is this concept of altering the quality of the item. It is going to be improved. That is a critical, critical component. Now, what kind of sources of heat are prohibited? So basically, everything, okay? Now, as well, we should make a distinction between one other thing that people get confused. There's another one of the prohibited activities called Havara, Hey Vez Ayin Resh Hey, which means kindling or making a fire. There's two distinct malachas we're talking about over here. One is turning on the stove, even if there's nothing on the stove. You have violated the Shabbos by creating a fire. That's one thing that's prohibited. That's not the malacha of Bishul. It's not the malacha of cooking. Cooking is when you have a fire already being on, and now you're putting the food exposed to the fire, and you are improving the quality or altering the quality item through the fire. So you have to make that quick distinction in your mind. So we're the assumption, the problems existing here are even though the fire is already on, and you're not doing anything with the fire. The problem is that the food is getting cooked. So it doesn't matter if you have the fire on before Shabbos, and I'm just going to put things on Shabbos. That's the problem. It's cooking. So you may very well transgress two sins by putting a raw chicken in the oven and turning on the oven would be two distinct averos. One is making a fire and one is cooking with a fire. So let's remember the focus is on the cooking aspect over here. So even the flame was kindled before Shabbos, you cannot have food on Shabbos that you are putting in on Shabbos to be cooked. Okay? Now, for that same token, it's forbidden to cook on or near any source of heat, whether it be an actual flame or an electric range or a hot plate or an urn. This is cooking now. We're not talking about warming and reheating. We're talking about cooking for the first time is not allowed. Cooking with a microwave oven is also prohibited. Okay? So all those things, you're not allowed. Any utensil you could think of to cook with, you can't use it on Shabbos. As a matter of fact, it could even go further. If, let's say, you would have put some food in hot water or a heated pot that was removed from the flame. Let's say I had a pot that was on the stovetop before Shabbos. And for whatever reason, it's there and it's really hot. And I take it right off of the oven. And that pot is really hot. And I put some cold water in that pot, I will transgress cooking. Why? Because the hot metal of the pot will cook the water, regardless of a fire being there. So any type of activity, doesn't matter the source of heat, it does not matter. You would transgress cooking. So that is the concepts of the sources of heat. Any questions on that first section? Of course not. It's simple and obvious, right? Told you, it's not a hard class. You just have to get the ideas. Okay, next point. What degree of cooking is prohibited? And there will be differences between solids and liquids in regard to this prohibition of cooking. And the first distinction concerns a point, at which point is this thing considered cooked? In other words, in all the transgressions of Shabbos, there has to be a minimal amount of activity that now makes it you have transgressed. There is an amount that has to occur. Let's give you a different example. Carrying on Shabbos. If there's no Eruv, you're not allowed to carry outside on Shabbos. So what constitutes an act of carrying? So let's say I have my glasses here, and I take one step. Have I carried? Is that enough called carrying? So the rabbis say, no, you have to go a distance of 4 amos, 6 feet, and now I have carried. That is an act of carrying. A half a step is not an act of carrying. So the question is now, what becomes an act of cooking? Biblically, if I just have the stove on and put a chicken in the stove for 30 seconds, well, maybe the chicken's beginning to start to cook. Is that enough to consider that I violated cooking on Shabbos? So we have specific amounts that have to be. Now, obviously, if you cook a food completely, you have clearly transgressed Shabbos. You put a chicken in the oven, it cooks for an hour, you have for sure transgressed cooking. There's no question about this. But on the biblical level, it happens even earlier. And there is what we call that minimal degree of edibility. And that degree of edibility is your first cooking term, which is called ma'achol ben derusoy. There used to be in the days of the Talmud, a thief, a highwayman, known as ben drusoy. And a highwayman can't have the luxury of having barbecues and cooking things till food is completely ready, because at a moment's notice he had to be hiding from the authorities. So he would have to cook it at a point where it's edible, but not certainly well done. So the question is, and that is the minimal amount that a person could eat something that needs to be cooked. So there's an argument in the poskim, in the decisors of halacha, as to how much or how little cooking is considered ben jerusoy. One opinion says if it's cooked a third of fully cooked, and that's in terms of normal cooking time. So the recipe calls for the chicken to cook for 1 hour. So that means after 20 minutes, even though it may not actually be one third cooked, because I think as you go further into cooking becomes more intense. But if it's one third of the cooking time, that would be the minimal amount to say you have biblically transgressed cooking on Shabbos. There's another opinion that says half cooked, half the normal time. We follow the stringent view and considered one third cooking a violation of this melacha, okay? And that is the time you would be transgressing. So if you're putting the chicken in the oven, and even if it's only going for 20 minutes, let's say, a third of the cooking time, you have transgressed with machol ben drusoy. However, let's say you have a chicken that's already one third cooked, and now you pop that in the oven, so it's still subject to the Torah prohibition of cooking. Why? Because it is achieving a greater degree of edibility at this point. So now we have a new principle. As long as the food is not fully cooked, okay, then no matter what improvement you make to the cooking process, that will be another transgression. So theoretically, you could probably transgress a dozen times on one chicken if you wanted. You know, you cook it to the machol ben drusoy, take it out, then put it back in for 5 minutes, take it out, put it back in for 5 minutes, take it out. Theoretically, you could transgress a number of prohibitions for that. What would be a very practical example of this? Let us say you have, I'm going to give you certain cases. Now, don't get bogged down in the details. I'm just trying to give you an idea. let's say you like to have steaks rare. Now, I'm not an expert in that, but I would assume it is at least the level of Machol Ben Drusoy. At least it's one-third cooked, but it is not nearly fully cooked, right? And therefore, let's say, just give you a for instance, we're making some assumptions here that we haven't taught yet. So Friday night you had some rare steak, and you had some leftovers, which you put into the fridge. And you know, and let's say the steak was dry. And then the next morning you figure, very nice, I will warm it up right on the hot plate. You know, because we know, well, we will learn that dry things can be reheated. Now, could you do that? No, you could not do that. Why? Because since it is only one-third cooked or one-half cooked, and now that rare steak, when you put it on that hot plate, can now become a medium to well-done steak, that improvement will now be a new biblical prohibition. So therefore, we will see it's a very critical point is for something to be considered fully cooked is really important. Only when you reach the stage of fully cooked, generally speaking, will you no longer be able to transgress the biblical prohibition of cooking food. So that's an important benchmark. And in many of the questions that you're going to have, we're going to deal with, we will see shortly, there's a quick distinction between fully cooked and not. Fully cooked is generally, but not exclusively, a safe zone on Shabbos. If you're dealing with something that is fully cooked, you're less likely to transgress anything, and it's much more likely to transgress if you're dealing with a food that is not fully cooked. I would compare fully cooked and not fully cooked to the example of the husband trying to repair some of the electrical things in the house. If you don't turn off the fuse box, you are dealing with a dangerous situation. Shut the fuse box off and do whatever you want. If you don't have it fully cooked, it's like the fuse box is on, and you can transgress easily. If the food is fully cooked, there is less likelihood of getting yourself in trouble. So that's an important concept regarding the level for solids. However, of course, you will find, together with what the Almighty said we could not do, the rabbis understand that if you leave people to their own devices, they will although technically the activity would not be biblically prohibited, but we fall very close to the slippery slope of transgressing something biblically. So the rabbis, to ensure the sanctity of the Shabbos, came with a number of decrees to make sure that we don't slip up. And here comes the first one, the following. The rabbi said, so let's say you have an uncooked item and you only plan to put it on the oven for a short while. For let's say you got a raw chicken and you only want it there for 5 minutes. For 5 minutes. And you plan on taking it off for 5 minutes. I will never come to the Machol Ben Drusoy. So the rabbi said you can't do it. Can you figure out why? No, it has nothing to do with no purpose. It's a much more practical reason. What you know what happens within the 5 minutes? Your baby starts crying. The Shabbos. The phone can ring anyway, but someone comes to the door. One of your kids stopped up the bathtub and it's overflowing. And the next thing you know, an hour has passed before you come back in the kitchen, right? You usually know that when something's burning, that's when you usually notice. But anyway, and now you come back, oh my goodness, the whole chicken is cooked already. I only wanted it for 5 minutes. So the rabbi said, you know what? If you wouldn't put it on to begin with, you wouldn't have any problems. So therefore, let's go back to our, now that's of course, you're never going to do that, but let's go back to our rare steak. Now you said you can't take that rare steak and put it back on the hot plate Shabbos morning, right? So let's say you got that rare steak and say, well, I know the rabbi said I can't cook it anymore. But that's our problem. That steak is really cold. I'm just going to put it on the hot plate for 10 minutes just to take the chill off of that steak. So it's just room temperature. There's going to be no cooking going on a hot plate for the first 10, 15 minutes. It doesn't have a chance to build the heat up. And I'm only going there for 10 minutes. So the rare steak, matter of fact, I don't like medium or well-done steaks for that matter. So I'm going to be extra careful that within 10, 15 minutes the most, I am going to take that off the hot train. There'll be no problem. And of course, the rabbis are concerned about what else will go on in the house. And next thing you know, it's an hour and a half later. And now the food has been cooked to a state beyond the rare state you put it in. And therefore, again, if the rabbis came along and said, if it is not fully cooked, you cannot put it in a position to become further cooked. Okay? So as you will see in this class, time and time again, it is best to deal with food that is fully cooked on Shabbos. It saves you a lot of aggravation. Okay? You'll see this at least another 10 times today. I was preparing this class, so I was giving it over to somebody else to get their input. So they gave an example that would be a very, classical example. For example, we know you couldn't warm up any raw or partially cooked food, right, that could be cooked more. So let's say you have certain vegetables, I hope I pronounce it right, that is cooked el dente. How did I go? Was it okay? Right? El dente.
Real French.
So, supposed to be, it's like you have certain vegetables that you want it to be just like, crisp or, but it's not fully cooked, right? It's hard, right? But not fully cooked. So that's certainly not fully cooked. So now you have made el dente whatever at night. And now Shabbos morning, you want to warm up your el dente and you put it on the hot plate. Well, el dente after an hour and a half may no longer be el dente. It could be el cookte, whatever. And that would be a legitimate problem. And I know a lot of people are health conscious and they want those vegetables that are just like, or let's say you parboiled something, right? And now you're going to warm it back on the hot plate and the next morning it's going to go much further cooked, and that would definitely be a violation of cooking on a biblical level. On a biblical level, you'd be transgressing. So therefore, the rabbis said, don't even put it to warm up. Not even to warm up, because it's so often that we make these kinds of mistakes. This is all regarding solids. Now, let's take a look at liquids. Now, heating liquid, what would be the biblical violation? Obviously, boiling point would be a nice description. Now, liquids work different than solids, obviously. Solids, there's something that's solid, and it takes a lot of time for it to either get soft or mushy or whatever, and the time factor is extremely important by solids. With liquids, it doesn't work that way, because generally speaking, a liquid cooking is boiling, finished. And once it is boiling, there's no question you have transgressed. Even if it's something that soup has to cook for an hour and a half, it doesn't matter. The liquid, once it is boiling, you have cooked it. And there's no question about it. It's the liquid. We're not worried about the solids in the liquid, but the liquid itself has already been transgressed. So therefore, even boiling, to a minimal degree, would be prohibited. However, again, just like we said, there was a minimum, just like by food, there's a concept of fully cooked, but you can transgress when you already hit the level of, what's that called? Ma'achol, very good. Ma'achol ben drusoy. So there's going to be a similar concept regarding liquids, where boiling will be complete, but what's that minimal level of not yet boiling but still transgressing? That is vocabulary word number two, which is called yad soledes bo, which literally means, yad means a hand, soledes means recoils, bo from it. So simply put, liquid does not have to be boiling at 100 degrees centigrade, Celsius, 212 Fahrenheit. You don't have to have it that hot for your hand to recoil. If it's that hot, your hand will burn, third degree burns. But to recoil, it's definitely much less. As a matter of fact, the rabbis and Talmud, I don't know how they come up with these ideas, but they say, more specifically, it's the temperature at which heated water would scald a baby's abdomen. Now, I don't think they did trials on that. but that, in other words, maybe a baby's abdomen is probably very sensitive, but that would be a temperature where that would happen. So, in practical terms, what is it? So, if Moshe Feinstein says, of blessed memory, he says, Yad Soledes Bo would be 110 degrees Fahrenheit, which is not that hot. A human being is 98.6. Okay? So you're only going another 14 degrees. It's warm, but not boiling hot. 43 degrees Celsius. That is the lowest opinion, although we will see there's another opinion that says 160 degrees Fahrenheit or 71 degrees Celsius would be called definitely Yad Soledes Bo. In other words, when you hit that point, there's no question it's Yad Soledes Bo. But Rav Moshe says even at 110, one should be concerned for Yad Soledes Bo. And therefore, generally, although not always, the lower temperature would represent astringency. and therefore you have to avoid getting liquids warming up to 110 degrees Celsius on Shabbos. Now, if you want something a little bit more practical, the Kaf HaChaim, one of the great Svardic decisors of Halacha, says it a little differently. He says, if you cannot put the food in your mouth. Because obviously, Yad Soles, if your hand recoils, your mouth would recoil too. The mouth isn't so much different than the hand. So if it's the kind of food that you can put it right in, then you know it's not Yad Soles, right? If it's already, you have to, that already, then that would probably be Yad Soles. So that's a more common way of measuring it. But it would be a little tricky to know what that is. It's not that hot, 110 Fahrenheit. And that would be absolutely supposed to be warming something to that degree. You could run into problems. Certainly, if you have hot plates with food that is not fully cooked, hot plates do go beyond 110 degrees Fahrenheit. So you would be transgressing, even if you wouldn't be cooking. Let's go back to that steak. That steak's going to be a good example for us to play with. That rare done steak. Let's say, for example, you know that your hot plate doesn't go to boiling, right? But it goes to 130, 140, whatever. That would be Yad Soles. Doesn't matter. And at that point already, that's hitting that minimal level of cooking, even though it may not cook the steak very much more. But if it's a raw steak, remember, if it's a fully cooked, there'll be different issues here. But a raw steak, once it's going at 110, so those hot plates that we do use often, if the food is not fully cooked, it could create a problem for us, because they definitely hit 110 Celsius. So that becomes the next issue over here.
Okay.
Okay, good point. I'm sorry. Good point. We'll do a liquid, rather. I shouldn't have said a steak. Thank you. Very good. Not a steak. We'll be talking about soup. A cold soup. Let's say you put a cold soup back on, which we'll talk about the problems involved with a cold soup. If it's not going to make it boil, let's say it won't make it boil, but it will bring it to Yad Soles Espo, then you're going to have a problem. So good, that's the soup. Excellent. Okay. And as well, the rabbis in that case as well said that even if you only plan on taking that soup and putting it on the hot plate for 20 minutes just to take the chill off of it, but you don't plan on it boiling it, the rabbi said you still can't do it because we're afraid you might forget about it and it will really boil it to Yad Soles Bo or better, which would not be allowed. So basically, up to this point, now, we will see later on that foods that were once completely cooked, when they are cooled, they may be reheated under certain circumstances, and we'll come to that shortly. So let's just summarize this part again. The Torah prohibition of cooking on foods, solids, the minimum level is called what? Don't all yell it out, not at the same time. Machol ben jusoy, which we hold is how much cooked? 1/3. We go strictly with 1/3. For liquids, what do we say it is? Yad Soles Espo, 110 degrees Fahrenheit. However, that's the biblical prohibition, the minimal biblical prohibition, but the minimal rabbinic prohibition is to put it there even for a moment near a source of heat capable of cooking that item to those levels, even though right now it's not, lest we're afraid you forget, and then you will transgress. Okay, that's good. We're so far okay. You got to get these terms solid, because next week I'm going to assume you know them, and then we're going to just... If you don't have them solid, you're going, well, what's this? I can't keep track. Is that so? You know, you got to get this clear.
Do the rabbis worry if it's going to build, in the Yad Soles Espo, if it's going to build up to? You said we can't put it by the source that's that temperature. Let's say you set it for 90, and the liquid eventually will itself reach up.
It can't reach itself more if the heat's only 90. It's not possible. It can't be any hotter than what the source of the heat is. It'll be a moot point.
Rabbi, I presume there's no such thing as pre-cooked liquids. Like it's not. If it's
we're going to talk liquid. About. We're going to talk about that. That's coming up. It's coming up in section 4. Okay, so we've done 2 sections so far. 2 to go. Number 3 section is called accelerating the cooking process, and this one has much applications. Accelerating the speed at which something will cook also violates the malacha of cooking. Meaning to say, even if you did nothing, it would cook. Let's say you put the chicken in the pot before Shabbos. And under many circumstances, that's fine, because you put it before Shabbos. It doesn't matter if it's cooking on Shabbos. So you've done that, and then you figure, you know, maybe I'll do something, it'll just get it done a little quicker. Instead of it being finished in an hour and a half, it'll be finished in an hour. You're going to say, well, what's the difference? You know, it's cooked anyway. No, we say if you accelerate it, that too, that act of acceleration is also included in a prohibited act of cooking. So, therefore, an item already on the flame, you know, can't be treated in a way that will cause it to cook more quickly. So the obvious thing you couldn't do without saying is raise up the temperature from 350 to 400. That would be wrong anyway because of what prohibition? Havara, kindling. You're making the fire bigger. If there was no food, it would be prohibited. But again, it would be a double whammy on you. You'd be transgressing kindling plus cooking. That goes without saying. But here are some additional ways of accelerating that you may not have thought, and they're just as prohibited in doing, and they're very common. Let us say you use, and we'll discuss this more at length next week, you have a metal sheet over your stovetop. It's called a blech. And you got one burner on or two burners on, and then one part of the metal is very hot, the other one's less hot. So let's say you've got your pot a little bit over to the side, and you just move it over to a hotter pot nearer to the flame, that will certainly make it be in a hotter zone, and that will accelerate the cooking process. That for sure is going to happen. Again, the problem is only if the food is not cooked, right? Again, not cooked means it's not cooked to the point at which people would normally eat it without requiring it to be further cooked. So changing the position of a pot over a fire area would be an obvious one. But then there's less obvious ones that you wouldn't think of, and this will have lots of applications. We'll give you a little of it now, but we can't give you the full because a lot of information is still lacking. But the second one is called reducing the amount of food or liquid in the pot. We know if there's less food in the pot will cook quicker. So if you have a pot of food that is not completely cooked, you could not remove some of that food. So the classic from example of this case is the Friday night raid of the cholent pot, right? That is the classic. Now, anybody in this home have people who raid the cholent pot on Friday night? What's the matter with you guys? Are you Jewish? Everybody raids the cholent pot on Friday, right? In yeshiva, we did it all the time, right? Anyway, may be blessed to become more into this. Okay? But you know, this is, you know what it is. The more religious you become, the less of the secular world you give up. The only thing you got left is to eat, right? So you're gonna eat a little bit more on Friday night, right? When you will have teenagers, your kids don't do that? What's the matter? Don't you make a good choice? They have to wait. Okay, maybe South Africans are more controlled. It's possible. Oh, but this is classical. This is, oh, maybe not yours. Oh man, I get, with the kind of face you made, I'd be afraid to touch it too, you know? I mean, in my house, they hit it big time. I mean, half of the cholent is gone by Friday night. It's quite common. And there's all kinds of interesting halachas that take into play. So let's say, for example, you have the crock pot on, and you put it on an Erev Shabbos, and now it's Friday night, and the cholent is 95% cooked. You know, the potatoes are soft, and the meat is soft, but some of that harissa still is a little stubborn, and it takes a little bit longer for the harissa to get hard. So what happens? The kids want to take a little bit from the cholent pot. Now, there's a lot of complexities to this, but I'm just giving you the point that we need to know. So you just open up the cholent pot, and you say, well, just take a few spoons. The meat is all finished. The potatoes are all finished. And we'll just have that and have some of that tonight. We'll close the pot. What have you done? Now, there is less contents in the pot, and that will accelerate the cooking process of the remaining food that is in there. And that would be a violation of the cooking process. Okay. Similarly, if you had an urn that was not yet reaching the maximum temperature, let's say you put the urn on right before Shabbos, which you could do, and it's going to take about a half an hour until it gets fully cooked. Well, anyway, you decided Shabbos came in. It's still making noise, that thing. The red light hasn't gone on yet. But figuring, I'm going to take a cup of tea now. Couldn't do that because now you've reduced the amount of water in the urn. The rest of the water will be cooked quicker, And that is something you could not do. So reducing, taking food out of a pot that's not fully cooked is a problem as well. Another problem that hastens the cooking process is stirring. You know, when you stir something, more steam comes out, and you could not stir partially cooked food or liquid. Even, let us say, that the pot has been removed from the stove, but still inside it, there's Yad Soletispo going on. So, and that would apply to any of this, even the case before, reducing some food, any of these things you can't do. Even if you take the pot off of the flame, but that pot is still very hot. So when you take out some food and less food, it will cook faster in that pot. If you stir it up, even if the pot is off the flame, it will make it go quicker. And another example is covering the pot. If a pot is open, it's going to take longer for it to cook. When the pot is closed, it will cook faster. So let's say you've gone to the chulent, to the crock pot, and of course, you may transgress this in three ways. You see what's going on over here. So what do you do? You take the lid off, number one, right? You take the spoon in and you gouge it into the chulent, number two, and now you've removed number three. You could three times have violated accelerating the cooking process. When you're finished, you put the lid back on. And that is a problem. Even if the cover is lifted just momentarily. So you can't listen. Let me just take a look at how the chulent's doing, you know. Can't do that. You're going to have all kinds of problems. You cannot even take a little peek and see how it's doing if it is not yet fully cooked. That's why the best thing to do is, unless you start the chulent at 9 o'clock in the morning on Friday, the best thing, and that's why you probably are on guard and don't let it eat, is just don't look at it till the next morning, and usually it's going to be fully cooked by the next morning. But these are the things we need to know. You'll see. You see, 5 years from now, you'll say the rabbi was right, that they do attack the chulent pot. So you'll have to know all these halachas, okay? Let's say just by mistake the pot became uncovered. Your kids were playing football in the kitchen, which is a very common thing in a Jewish home, especially Friday night when they're taking food out of the chulent pot. And they throw the football, it knocks the lid off of the crock pot top. You cannot put the crock pot top back on if the harissa is not fully cooked. Okay. And finally, and this one is a great one, closing an oven door. We will discuss all the details of how you can and cannot open an oven door on Shabbos. But one thing's for sure, if an oven door is open and there's food in it, closing it will definitely accelerate the heat that's going on over there. All right. So if there's any food in your oven that is not fully cooked, you could not close the door. Same thing, you're making a chulent. You want to take a look and see how the chulent is doing. Dangerous pastime to do, because if it's not fully cooked, you could not close that oven. Now, same thing. Let's say you took the pot and removed it from the stove. Same problem, as long as it's still Yad Soletispo. Same issue. So therefore, you have to be careful. You also have to be careful with other issues with the stove, which we'll talk about at other times. One being, can you even open up the stove on Shabbos? That's a whole other issue that will have to be discussed. If you open up the stove, let's say the thermostat hasn't clicked on for the last 20 minutes and it's just hovering for it to drop another degree, and then click, the thermostat goes on, the red light goes on, the thermostat is now activated, and all it's waiting for is you to open that door, let a little cool air go into the stove, and boom, the light goes on. So that's already a different problem. That's a question not of cooking, but of havora, of kindling again. So that's another issue that has to be talked about later, but that's something that we have to take into consideration. You also have to remember that if you do have an oven, that you are taking something out, that the oven light doesn't turn on when you open the door. That's why it's good to have the Sabbath mode ovens, that you can set them before Shabbos, keep the light on all the time or off all the time, etc., etc. Those are all, secondary issues, but the main issue is, so, for example, let's say a classic example, and people always get confused in this, you are allowed to have food in the oven as Shabbos comes in. After food is fully cooked, there is no problem once Shabbos comes to take the food out. There is this myth called you can only take food out once from the oven. It's not totally accurate. It could be accurate, but it's not totally accurate. Here's where the problem is. Let's say you have in the oven, you've got the chicken for tonight's dinner, you got the rice for tonight's dinner, and you got the chulent for tomorrow's lunch. In the oven. All in the oven. You could do that theoretically. Theoretically, you could do that. But sometimes you can't, and here's when you couldn't. Let's say you put the chulent on right before Shabbos. The chicken and the rice, let's say you put it all in right before Shabbos, right? But by the time dinner's ready, everything's going to be ready, except the chulent. Right, now, so, let's say you didn't have any chulent in the oven. Let's say all you had was chicken and rice, and you had it cooking, and it's all ready to go, and now it's Shabbos, and it's the 2 hours later, your husband's, your wife's home from shul. You could open the oven, take the food out, and that's fine. It's not a problem. But if the chulent is in there and the chulent is not fully cooked, you can certainly open the oven. But that's all you can do. You cannot close the oven. So that's where this idea, people say, well, you have to take everything out. No, you don't have to take everything out. If the chulent is fully cooked before you open that door, then there's no problem to leave the chulent in. And you could take the chicken and rice out and leave the chulent in, provided it is fully cooked. We may not always know what fully cooked is. That's another issue. So that is a classic example of how closing the oven door could be a problem if the chulent is not fully cooked. There's anything in there that's not fully cooked. And when you close it, it accelerates the cooking process for that.
As we said before, even if the oven timer makes the oven go off, you still have a problem closing the door if the oven's hot.
Yes, very good point, Paul. Excellent. If you have the stove on a timer, and this timer now has shut the oven off, but the oven is still at 225 degrees Fahrenheit, well above even the boiling point, right? So now you're going to open the stove and then close it back, and something is not fully cooked. That's a problem. That's for sure a problem. It's no worse than taking a pot off of the stove, because there's heat of 200 degrees plus in there that is still working by the fact that you've closed the door and it works better. So that's a very good point that you raised there. Okay, we're doing really good. Okay, we now are coming to the fourth topic of reheating cooked foods. Okay, everybody's okay now? All right, so now we have accelerating the process. Now reheating. Okay, now here's the general rule, and then there's going to be exceptions to the general rule and then applications to the general rule. The malach of cooking does not apply in all instances of reheating food. And we'll see there's a significant difference between solid dry foods and liquids in regards to reheating. Different laws. So let's look at solids right now. By solids such as, what's a solid? Chicken without tons of gravy. A regular piece of dry chicken. Maybe a little bit moist on the inside. Doesn't have to be, you know, totally bone dry piece of white meat. Could be a piece of dark meat with a little bit of natural schmaltz inside the chicken, right? Hamburgers, kugel. That's what we would call dry type of food, right? Spaghetti, whatever, is dry. It's completely cooked. It is not subject to the malacha of cooking. You can't cook it again. It's like double indemnity or double jeopardy, whatever you call it. And it's called, and here's term number 3, ein bishul achar bishul. Bishul means cooking. There is no cooking after cooking. In other words, when we're dealing with a solid food that's already been cooked, you cannot cook it again. It's not possible to cook it again. So on a simply put, if I have a dry potato kugel that I have in the fridge and Shabbos morning, all things being equal, you can take that dry potato kugel. Now you can't go put it in the oven, because we will learn in a couple of weeks, even if something's totally cooked, we don't put anything in the oven on Shabbos, because people will think then you could put foods that aren't even cooked in the oven. We'll talk about that later. But let's say where it's totally permitted, right? So when it's totally permitted, a hot plate, it's totally permitted to take a piece of fully cooked kugel, put it on top of the hot plate, there's no problem at all. Oh, it's going to get hot, it's going to get to yatzo lettuce bowl, it's going to get to boiling, it doesn't matter, it's cooked, cooked is cooked. Once you've cooked your goose, you can't cook it again. right?
That's what I resisted.
That's okay. So it says you can't remember, what is the definition of cooking? What did we say the definition is? Could somebody read it to me again? To alter the quality of an item. How are you altering the quality? The kugel is still a kugel. Warmer isn't quality. A cold piece of kugel, a warm piece of kugel, it is the same, what do you call it? Still chemistry is the same over there. Raw and cooked is a different story. So just being warm is not called altering the item. And therefore there's no problem on a salad to reheat it because you can't cook it again. Yes, ma'am. Well, we'll talk about that in a minute. Hold on. It depends how you made the chicken. So hold on. We'll get to that.
Even with respect to a kugel, it could get more brown or burnt.
But that's burnt is not better. Remember, it's got to be better, not worse. It may have altered it, but altered for the worse is not better. So that's not going to be a problem. You can't violate cooking by messing it up, only by improving it. Okay? So that's not a problem. But your chicken is an interesting scenario. It depends how you make your chicken. We will discuss that shortly. So you've got something over there, Carmela. We have to develop that. But that is the idea. Ein bishul achar bishul. You can't cook it at all. Okay? Okay. Now, but as we said, there's a rabbinic prohibition to put it in the stove, the oven, that already you can't do. To put it over a roaring fire, that you can't do, because then it looks like you're actually cooking, but that's a rabbinic issue. Okay. So that is for cooked things. How about a challah that you have baked, right? So you'd like to reheat the challah. You know, you're gonna put the challah in some foil or whatever, and you're gonna put it on top of the hot plate, so it'll be nice and warm. Also not a problem. You can't bake a challah twice. Baked is baked, right? So you could reheat them on Shabbos. Again, you couldn't put them though directly on a fire again, couldn't put them in the oven again. That would be a big problem. That you couldn't do on Shabbos. Now, however, there is one interesting point that you couldn't do. You can't bake a challah twice, but could you toast a challah after you baked it? I mean, is it possible, theoretically, to toast bread?
Yes.
Well, it's very easy. If you would put your challah smack on the hot plate, and it's a hot, hot plate, you know what's going to happen to your challah in about 45 minutes? It will become toasted challah. And now you have altered the food because toast is not challah. Just like you take a slice of white bread, and you put it in the toaster, it is now toast. Toast is not a piece of challah. That you have enhanced. That's why they sell toasters. Right? I mean, they only sell toasters because, toast tastes better than regular bread. So don't you see how we've altered the food? So it's possible. Now you may be thinking, all I want to do is have a warm challah. But why? But if you put it smack on the hot point of that hot plate, you leave it there long enough, you will have nice toasty challah. That you couldn't do. So what you should do is, let's say you have those, what do you call those things? When you take a challah to cool, that's a little thing you put, you know what I mean? That the lines and the, you know, what do you? That's not a trivet, it's something else. A rack. Like a rack, a cooling rack. So what you would do is you'd put a cooling rack on top of the hot plate, and the challah would rest over it, then it's less likely it's going to toast. It'll only get warm. You see the difference? Or you put a lot of aluminum, whatever. We have to discuss if you do that. Well, that's a different type of hadmana. But anyway, you have to be careful. So technically, you could re-warm the challah. Nothing wrong with having a warm challah Shabbos in the day. You can't re-cook it. But you have to be careful. You don't toast the challah. Toasting the challah would be a problem. So generally, we said Ein bishul achar bishul. And now we said Ein afia achar afia. There's not baking after baking. Now, yes.
Don't want to be pedantic about this, but if the bottom of it gets burnt, not the bread part that's getting toasted.
No, the whole bread's going to get toasted. You'll see. Depending how thin it is, it could really get it toasted.
I'm talking about you put the whole challah on. So you only got the bottom of it on the
So you've toasted part. The bottom.
So that's considered toast as
you've
well.
Toasted you the bottom. You know, do this on your own. Take a piece of white bread and just put it on a hot plate and see what happens in 25 minutes. It turns into a piece of toast. So again, if you put it into, we're going to talk about tin foil. That's a whole other issue. We'll have to discuss that. But you would have to worry if you put it flat on and you leave it for a good while. And but even though you're just planning on taking the chill off of it, but you might forget and it would turn into toast, and you're going to have a problem. Right? So that could be a problem. So you have to be careful. You have to be careful. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying you can't do it, but you have to have a way to know that it won't turn it into toast. And we'll discuss some other ways later. Now, so let's talk about baking and cooking. Baking and cooking are two distinct methods of improving the quality of a food. So let's think about it now. What a food that's been cooked, does it have the qualities of one that's been baked? Or one that's been baked, does it have the qualities of something that's been cooked? Obviously not, because we have boiled chicken and we have roasted chicken. Baked chicken, aren't they different qualities of chicken? Certainly they are different qualities of chicken. Therefore, although there's no prohibition of re-cooking a cooked item or re-baking a baked item, but the rabbis do rule that an item that was baked cannot now be cooked. And an item that was cooked cannot now be baked. Or for that matter, baked and roasted is in the same category, and cooking, boiling with liquid is a different category, right? So it will depend. So if you would put a piece of cold chicken that was boiled, nice piece of white chicken, and you take it out of the soup, and it's nice and dry, and now you put it right smack on the hot plate, what's going to happen to that chicken? It's going to roast. And then you're going to have a problem, right? Even though it's dry and fully cooked, I could put it theoretically back in a hot soup. Theoretically, I could do that because it's not going to be cooked again, would it? That's not a problem. You left your soup on. You could technically throw it back into the soup tomorrow, provided it's not over the stove and et cetera, et cetera. But a chicken boiled in soup or gravy is considered cooked. That's a problem. If the pot's removed from the blech and the soup poured off, you can't put that pot of dry chicken on that source of heat because you will now roast it. So you see how that could be a problem. Okay? So that's something to be careful. So that see how Carmela that addresses the issue you brought up before? Now let's just do the other side over here. Based on the premise that cooking, roasting, and baking are distinct improvements, so therefore, you know, cooking an item that was originally baked or roasted could also be a problem. So we're saying that yesh bishul achar afia, there is cooking after baking. Yesh afia achar bishul, there's baking after cooking. Yesh tzli, there's roasting after cooking. And there's yesh bishul achar tzli, there's cooking after roasting. So let's think about it for a minute. Let us say you have baked croutons. And you would put the baked croutons right on the soup pot that's over the stove. Now, see how I worded it, exactly the way I worded it. You could not do that because now those baked croutons will now become cooked croutons, and that would be a different form of cooking. Now, can you put them in your plates and bowls later on? That's a discussion that we need to know other information before we can get to that. But that would be clearly a problem. Bread or matzah, anything on top of something that is considered a cooking position. For sure, a pot on top of the stove would definitely be considered that kind of cooking position. There's other things as well. Let's say the pot off of the stove, boiling hot, would still be considered the cooking position. You could not put a baked item. What about if I ladled out into a tureen and from the tureen into a bowl? Could I put it in there? That will be next week's class. So you have to come next week to find that out. But clearly the concept being that something that was baked could be cooked afterwards exists, and therefore we can't do that. And that is the rest of our terms. Bishul is number 5, cooking, which means cooking with liquid. Afia means baking. Sli means roasting. Yes?
So, back to the chicken. So, I baked the chicken, There's no liquid.
You baked it.
I baked the chicken.
With no liquid, that's called...
No, I separated it. Before Shabbos, I separated it.
But what, how did you make the chicken?
I baked it in the liquid.
So you cooked it. No, that's a big difference.
Okay,
right? If it's sitting in the liquid, it's cooking. If it's not with a liquid, it's roasting. There's two different activities. So you have to know what you're doing. You have to know what's cooking.
I cooked the chicken in the liquid.
Yeah.
Before Shabbos, I separated the liquid.
Yes, ma'am.
Put it in the fridge.
Yes, ma'am.
Then I took the chicken out the next day.
Yes.
Can I put that chicken onto the warming tray?
Not directly onto the warming tray where we would roast it. So you would have to be testing these things out before Shabbos. If it is acting in a roasting fashion, even if you put it into a plate, if there's no liquid at all, it could possibly roast it. You may have to put something underneath that so it only gets the heat, but not intense heat. The intensity of the heat will determine if it will become roasted or not. So you'll have to trial and error before Shabbos to see, you could tell. You could put anything on a hot plate and roast it if you're not careful. So you'd have to know if by putting it on the plate it won't roast it, then that's fine. If it only warms it, it's okay. But if you're going to notice, it's going to start changing colors and it will now become roasted chicken, you couldn't do that. So you'd have to see how it works. Okay, I can't give you an exact answer because I don't know your plates. Okay, next, one more topic to go. We're right on schedule here, right? So that's all solids. Solids, generally, you can't cook or bake a solid after another, but there's no such thing as cooking after cooking, baking after baking, but there is baking after cooking, cooking after baking. Now, what about liquids now? Liquids. You cooked a chicken soup, and now it is cold. And now you'd like to reheat the chicken soup. So this is a big, big, big argument in the Talmud and all the poskim and all the rabbis. Is there bishul achar bishul? Is there a problem of cooking after cooking on liquids? Is there not a problem of cooking after cooking on liquids? Now, what is the logic to say that it's a problem? How is a liquid inherently different than a piece of solid? The answer is, let's say you have a chicken. Chicken was raw. Okay, after an hour, it is now no longer raw. It is cooked. Now, once it is cooked, I can't cook it anymore. Right? I can't alter the quality of it anymore. I can make it warm, but I can't cook it anymore. Right? A liquid, part of the idea of a liquid, cooking a liquid, is the whole idea of making a cold liquid warm, that itself is the whole thing. Water, right? The making it hot, that is the altering process, right? You don't want to have cold tea. You have to have the water hot to have hot tea. That's just the way it works. The whole idea with liquids is the cooking isn't so much that it's cooking for hours and hours and changing from a soft or a hard piece of meat to a soft piece of meat. It's cold and it's now hot, and that's the cooking. So it would turn out at that point, if it gets cold, it's uncooked. It's uncooked. And therefore, re-warming it back to boiling, would be a brand new act of cooking. On a simple level, you have water. You want to have some hot tea. You boil it up. Very nice. So now it's cooked. Okay, an hour passes. It's cold. Well, now that it's cooked, I can drink the tea with the cold water? Mm-mm. It's not going to work. I gotta re-cook it. So by liquids, it's possible that initial cooking effect no longer exists. And therefore, other rabbis say no. The fact it got cooked once, to boil it the second time will be easier. That's what they say. Sometimes it's boiled once, whatever. But the point is they say it's already cooked once, it doesn't have to cook again. There's no problem cooking again. So this is an argument amongst the rabbis. How do we hold? So in practice, though there's different opinions in the latter rabbis, in practice, we follow the stringent view. And therefore, one may not reheat liquids once they have been cooled. But bear in mind, we are being strict here. And now that we know we're being strict, in later scenarios, it's like you have two paths. We can go lenient, we can go strict. Once you're taking the strict path, now you may be on the strict path and now you're going to have another fork in the road of halacha. Well, once I've already gone once strict, and now the next options are strict or not, you know what we say? You don't have to be so strict anymore because we've already been strict once. This is as opposed to other cases where something's raw, and to cook it again, that's biblically, it's not strict, you're not allowed to. So we're not, wouldn't allow any further leniencies to come in. But since we're already strict with a liquid that's cooled off, we will find next week where in other places we would be strict for other things in certain areas. But for this, since we've been strict once, we won't be strict again. You don't know what I'm talking about. But next week when I do just slip that in on you, you're going to say, oh yeah, that's what he was talking about. We will see in case of where, you know, you could put water that was reheated and cooled down. Can you put it in certain places where other things can't put down? Because remember, there is an opinion that says there's no cooking, there's no problem with liquid after liquid. There are certain opinions. There's not a problem. There's certain opinions say you can take cold chicken soup and put it right on the hot plate. There are opinions. We don't go like those opinions. We're strict. The fact that we don't warm up our chicken soup on Shabbos is we're going after the opinions that are strict. But since we're being strict, if there's another factor involved, we will be lenient in the area of liquids that have already cooked once. Now, another important point, and here's another example of this. Therefore, let's say if you had a soup, and you took the soup, I'm not trying to make it as simple as possible, you took the soup off the hot plate. You had a soup fully cooked on a Shabbos, you take it off the hot plate to serve. I wouldn't recommend that, but you did that, okay? Now, it's cooled down a bit, but it's still warm enough and suitable as a warm drink. It could be below Yad Soledes, but it still could be warm. At 108, it's still warm. I mean, it's not boiling, but it's still warm. So here we'll be lenient, since we're being strict already, right? So if it is still what we would call a warm drink, right, you may put it back on the hot plate, and you may reheat it to a higher temperature. Because since they're still warm, reheating would not be a significant improvement. Remember, if it's cold, then reheating it becomes a significant improvement. But by the fact that it's already still in the warm degree, so that's very practical situation, because it often happens that there's people who are your guests that want to be very helpful, and they do things without asking. And one of the things they do is they just take the soup right off of the hot plate. You know, and then all of a sudden you realize somebody says, you could have a little more soup, and it's already, you know, cooled down a bit. But to put it back on a blech, we'll see, on a hot plate is okay, provided it has not cooled down.
You can't cover it.
Oh, you could, because why couldn't you? It's not. That's a good point. It's not speeding up. That's only if it hasn't been cooked yet. If it hasn't yet been cooked at all, let's say you try to cook the soup before Shabbos and it's not yet cooked, then you couldn't put it on a flame or do anything to make because now you're going to be cooking it. But if it's already was cooked, remember there's opinions that say there's no problem of cooking it again. We're being strict and say it is a problem. So you see, we're going to be lenient in that area already, that as long as it is still in the warm zone, it hasn't yet been considered no longer cooked. So the fact that I'm warming it up, it's just still in the zone of cooked. Only when it is cold, then I can't go put it back on or do anything to hasten that process. So that becomes a very practical halacha you have today, that if the soup is taken off, now you can't put it back on the fire, because you can't put anything back on the fire on Shabbos. Under certain circumstances, we'll discuss with a blech and this and that, that's going to be maybe the fifth week. But if the soup went off, you could put it on as long as it is still a touch warm. Okay? Good. Yes?
Okay.
Back to your chicken, right?
The chicken soup. So, the chicken soup's on the pot.
Chicken soup is in the pot. Usually, in my house, it's in the pot.
The
yes.
Tray.
It's on the warming tray.
Can you take the lid? It's still on the warming tray.
Is it hot? Fully cooked?
Fully cooked and hot.
Do what you like.
Can you take the ladle and pour it into the bowl while it's still on the warming tray?
Why not? Okay, we're going
to
talk about other things. Okay, let's ladle questions. Let's leave for later.
So it's just better to pour it into another.
Let's wait. I don't want to get into that. I'm not. I don't want to get into ladles. That's its own class. So we're not ready to talk about ladles. I'm sorry. I know you want to know all the answers tonight. I told you you're not going to know all the answers tonight. Just know what we learned today. It's enough to, you know, I gotta review this and memorize it, cause to next week's gonna be based on this, right? Yes?
The soup that you cook for Shabbat, it's ready cooked for Shabbat. Can I leave it over Shabbat on the oven?
On top of the stove?
Yes.
You could, but we'll have to discuss the issues of how you can take food off or not. That becomes complicated. But in theory, in theory, you can leave it on the stove even without a blech, which we'll find out. But you can leave it over the whole Shabbos. How are you going to serve? Another things we will still have to learn about that.
So, if you've got a chicken that's cooked in a gravy, can you
kind of visualize it? Yes, go ahead.
Can you put that on your hot tray on Shabbos?
Smothered in gravy?
Not smothered, but
well, if there's a like a little collection of gravy there. There's no problem with the chicken, there's a problem with the gravy. Gravy is a problem. Liquid gravy. What?
If you're heating soup, why can't you do it?
Because it's cold now. It's cold now, remember? It's tomorrow morning, right? Now, if, for example, you took the chicken with the gravy off of the hot plate and it is still warm, you could put it back on. But if it's the next morning where it is probably congealed and it's nice and really looking unhealthily fat, right? Now you're gonna put, that's really cold. You're gonna put that on the hot plate, that's gonna turn warm, and that, because of the gravy, you have a problem. So therefore it's a very good idea, as, you know, they used to have in, Cleveland, you know, hints from Heloise, you know, that she'd give you all these cooking ideas, I don't, you know. So hints from the rabbi of cooking. So Friday night, what you want to do if you have a chicken in liquid, you want to take that chicken, and when you're putting it away for the next day, take it out of the liquid and put it somewhere else. So when you reheat it tomorrow, it's only chicken and no liquid. You follow? You don't want to put it away with all the liquid and then put it on the hot tray the next day. Because now you have a problem with those liquids warming up. So a wise person thinks in ahead, you know, I gotta warm tomorrow. But if it's got liquid all over the place, liquid is a bad guy. You wanna stay away from liquids warming up. So therefore you just spill out the liquid or whatever. You have to make sure you don't transgress other averas by separating the liquid from the meat. Best way is just take the meat right out and let it drip off, and then you got a dry semi. It doesn't be totally bone dry, but it could be a little wet on the top. But basically, it's a dry piece of meat. That's what you'd be warming up. There's other things you could do, which we'll talk about, but that's a helpful suggestion. Yes? And we'll have to cut it after this question because we have to daven Marv.
A hot plate or warming tray, does that help differently halachically to a
blessed person? Okay, hot plate and warming trays will count differently. That will be a topic in 2 weeks. There are certain differences. What? I said hot plates guardedly. I mean, specifically, because there's less of a problem. I will give a class on blechs. You know, I'll give a class on blech. We'll get the differences between the blech, hot plate, and, what do you call it? The slow cookers. We're gonna say the virtues and the deficits of each one, and then you could decide which one you wanna use. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed the class. Please review this. Don't come in cold next week. Review
because
it.
Because we can't reheat next week.
Right? Can't reheat it. Because we're gonna now move into next week is first, second, and third vessels. So that's gonna be a lot more trickier.